welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, July 14th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Labour reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga sits down with Patrick DeRochi, the senior manager at Shift Action for Pension Wealth and Planet Health. The two discuss how Shift is fighting to protect pensions and the climate. Patrick DeRochi is the senior manager for Shift. DeRochi has been deeply involved in developing federal and provincial climate and energy policy and regulations and acts as a regular commentator in national media. Here are Patrick DeRochi and Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga in conversation. Take a listen.
So thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today, Patrick.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
So just to start off, I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about your work with Shift Your Pension.
Sure. So my name is Patrick DeRochi. I'm the senior manager for Shift Action for Pension and Wealth and Planet Health, or Shift for short. We're a small NGO and a charitable project that tracks the fossil fuel investments and climate policies of Canada's largest public pension plans. And we organize and mobilize the members of those plans, beneficiaries, to engage their pension managers on the climate crisis.
And in your work, what kind of issues have you seen in how pension funds are being invested?
Yeah, so we track Canada's 11 or 12 largest public pension plans. Together, they have over $2 trillion Canadian in assets under management. And what we've found so far in our research is that none of these funds are aligning their massive investment portfolios with climate safety, with limiting global temperature increase to 1.5 degrees Celsius and ensuring that their own beneficiaries have a safe climate future to retire into. We need to consider that these are not just a tiny RSP or a savings account that's sitting in your bank account. These are massive global asset owners and asset managers that own companies, infrastructure all over the world. And in many ways, they have more assets under management than the GDP of many countries. So they're just not a bank account. They might own bridges, highways, water utilities, electric utilities, entire tech companies, healthcare companies. They're investing in every continent in the world. And these are really massive financial players in the global stage that are managing the retirement savings of public sector workers who are often unionized. So think about teachers, nurses, healthcare workers, municipal employees, public servants, university and college professors and staff. So these pension funds are responsible for the retirement savings of millions of Canadians, and they have a duty, a legal obligation to invest in their best long-term interests.
And you mentioned, so a lot of these investments aren't in line with, you know, reducing emissions, keeping temperatures down. So what does that mean exactly? Where is this money going and how is it affecting the climate?
Yeah, so I should provide some background on that. So there's a number of different climate-related financial risks that are particular to these large public pension plans that they need to have a really good hold of. And they're also a really good target for climate action organizing, or for a number of reasons. For one, they're massive investors. They're huge global investors and asset managers. And that means that they have the power and the influence to actually determine how quickly we can decarbonize our economies and help companies and countries get to net zero. The other part is that millions of Canadians are members of these funds. So if you take the example of the Canada Pension Plan, which is $570 billion in assets under management, that's over $500 billion. 21 million Canadians are members of that pension plan. It's our national retirement funds. And that means that every time that you and I get a paycheck, a certain amount of that paycheck is going to the Canada Pension Plan, whether we like it or not, to manage those savings and ensure that we have part of that money when we retire. And thirdly, these pension funds have a legal obligation to their members. They need to ensure that they're investing in the best long-term interests to protect the retirement security of their members. And that means that they can't discriminate between, you know, a retired person that might be 85 years old and has been collecting their pension already for 20 years versus someone maybe yours or my age that can't expect to retire for another few decades. So they need to ensure that that retirement security is there for us 40, 50 years from now when we retire. And of course, that requires us to have a safe climate to retire into, which by definition would mean that we need to have a stable financial system, a stable economy, functioning ecosystems in order for us to actually enjoy retirement and collect that pension. So from our research, we don't actually think that these pension funds have internalized the fact that we are facing climate breakdown if we don't rapidly reduce global emissions. And that means stopping the production, transportation, extraction, and refining of fossil fuels. And not only do we not see pension plans aligning their portfolio to do that, but in many cases, they own fossil fuel companies. They privately own oil and gas companies that are still expanding their production, that are still exploring for more oil and gas, that are lobbying against climate action, that are not investing in a just transition for workers, and are doing all kinds of things that suggest that they're not taking the Paris Agreement's 1.5 degrees Celsius goal seriously.
I was wondering, was there any progress that has been made, you know, since the start of your research? How far along are we in, you know, seeing more sustainable investments from pension boards?
Yeah, to their credit, we have seen a lot of progress from the pension funds. Some who are, you know, doing almost nothing on climate change when we started tracking this a few years ago, to making some real progress where they're putting some serious climate plans and policies in place. I'll give the example of the Caisse de dépôt et placement du Québec, which is the manager of the Quebec pension plan and other public pension plans in Quebec. They actually took the step last year to divest all oil producers from their portfolio by the end of 2022. So they're really in kind of the leadership category of the Canada's pension sector. But we've also seen some really strong commitments and plans from other funds, such as the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, Ontario's University Pension Plan, and the Investment Management Corporation of Ontario, which is a pension manager for some of Ontario's public servants. And just in general, the entire sector has made progress. We're seeing most of these funds now committing to net zero emissions by 2050. And most of them are developing climate plans and policies. And they're all, you know, using a number of tools to do a pretty sophisticated analysis of how climate risk is affecting their portfolio. So we've seen some pretty big improvements, but it's not nearly enough. And we really need to be moving in one direction right now, and that's emissions reduction and decarbonization. And unfortunately, companies in these pension funds' portfolios are moving in the opposite direction. They're expanding fossil fuels. They're not putting out credible climate plans and transition plans. They're exploring for more oil and gas, and they're undermining government efforts to put in place strong climate policy. And we really need to see these pension plans become advocates to ensure that their own members have a safe environment, a safe climate future to retire into.
So it sounds like there's been a lot of commitments made, but maybe not as much action as we need. So how can we, like as people, as workers who are paying into these pension plans, mobilize so that these commitments actually translate to action?
Yeah, so that's one of the core parts of our work is we've been organizing, mobilizing workers to start speaking out to their pension managers directly about how they need to better align their portfolio with a safe climate future. And this is no longer a theoretical exercise. Canadians are facing the impacts of climate change right now. We're seeing this horrible fire season where some Canadian cities are experiencing the worst air quality in the world. Children, you know, have had to be kept in at school because of how bad that smoke is. We saw towns in BC last summer burnt to the ground by wildfires. We're seeing the worsening impacts of floods, hurricanes, fires, storms that are damaging our infrastructure, that are limiting GDP growth, that are actually like limiting a stable economy that these pension funds depend on. So we hear a lot now from pension plan members, from a teacher, for example, saying, you know, I spend my entire career educating young people and helping them get prepared for the future, but my own retirement savings are investing in companies and infrastructure that are undermining that future. We're here from nurses now that are saying we're on the front lines of the climate crisis. We're dealing with extreme heat. We're dealing with patients who are suffering from climate-related illnesses, from smoke inhalation, from the increasing health effects of natural disasters. So they're dealing with it every day, but their own pension plan is investing in fossil fuels, which of course is the cause of climate change, the number one health crisis that we're facing in the 21st century. And we have government workers, for example, someone who might work on a climate plan for a municipality in Ontario or BC, whose pension plan is investing in the companies that are making the climate crisis worse, that are undermining the work they're doing every day to protect their cities and municipalities from climate action. So the impacts of this crisis are being felt directly in their jobs and their personal lives by the members of these pension plans. And they're fed up with the fact that their pension managers are still investing in the companies that are causing this crisis and making it worse.
And in your research, have you found any kind of reasoning from, people who are, handling these funds for why they remain invested in these companies?
That's a really good question, and we're not sure why, considering that the scientific consensus exists now that we need to phase out fossil fuels rapidly in order to protect a safe climate future. This is not up for debate. This is the International Energy Agency, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the Canadian government itself, saying that there is no safe climate future if we continue to burn fossil fuels at the rate that we are. And we need to see a rapid decline in production of oil, gas, and coal. And it's a little bit bewildering to me that these multi-hundred billion dollar pension managers with an army of staff behind them can't admit this publicly when there is scientific consensus around this. One of the reasons I think that they are hesitant to do this, and I should note that many other pension funds all over the world have already taken this step. We've seen Europe's largest pension plan, ABP, divest from fossil fuels a couple of years ago. We're seeing our neighbors in New York, the New York State Common Retirement Fund, which is the second largest pension fund in the US, getting rid of fossil fuels. Some of the UK's and Europe's and Australia's largest pension plans have come to this conclusion that they can no longer invest in these companies because they are not aligned with a safe climate future and retirement security for their own members. So Canada's become a laggard compared to their peers in the rest of the world on this issue in particular. And one of the reasons I think that is simply the influence of the fossil fuel industry, both in Canada's policy and political context, but also in the pension funds themselves. We put out a report last year that tracked all of the entanglements between the Canadian pension sector and the fossil fuel industry. And we found about 130 different examples of pension fund directors, executives, staff who previously or currently also sit on the board of directors of a fossil fuel company or previously worked for a fossil fuel company. So there's this kind of deep entanglement, just like there is in the rest of Canadian society, between the pension sector and the oil and gas sector in Canada. And I think that's one of the key kind of political obstacles to getting them to move faster on climate action. The other issue I see coming up a lot is why they're not moving faster is that these pension funds often own fossil fuel companies themselves. They own the pipes in the ground. They own fossil fuel infrastructure. I'll give the example of the Canada Pension Plan, since every Canadian outside of Quebec is a member, if you're working in Canada. And they own, for example, one of Colorado's largest oil and gas companies. They're the largest shareholder in that company. Just this spring, they bought California's second largest oil and gas producer. They own natural gas distribution and transmission networks all over South America, North America, and Europe. They own the Alberta Carbon Trunk Line out west here in Canada. So they are currently making money off of the production, extraction, refining, and transportation of oil, gas, and coal. And that means that they have an incentive to stay invested in this industry because their own infrastructure that they own in their portfolio is making money off of it. So I think that's another big obstacle to them doing what's necessary to minimize the damage from climate change. When you actually own the infrastructure that the fossil fuel economy is dependent on, it makes it a lot more difficult to divest your portfolio or to just sell stocks in a company because they are so deeply entangled in the fossil fuel economy itself.
So how can we address those obstacles and those entanglements?
That's a great question, and we're trying our best to do that. For one thing, we are calling on members of these pension plans, beneficiaries, whether they're working or retired, to start speaking out. We have an action tool online. It's shiftyourpension.ca. You can go there and with one click or two clicks, send a letter to your pension plan saying that you want to see an end to investments in oil, gas, and coal. You want to see credible science-based climate transition plans for the assets they do own. And you want to see massive new investments in climate solutions that are good for our communities, like renewable energy, energy efficiency, electric vehicles, sustainable agriculture, all the things we need. So that's really the first step we ask our supporters to do, is to send that letter. But there's also numerous opportunities for pension plan members and stakeholders to get involved here. For example, they're often attending pension plan AGMs to ask some pretty pointed and direct questions about their fossil fuel investments and how they're approaching climate change. We actually do a lot of work with public sector unions now, because many of the members of these pension plans are, of course, also members of public sector unions. Think about the big teachers unions or the big unions that represent government workers or healthcare workers. These are all members of these public pension plans, and their own representatives are often trustees or directors in these pension plans. So the labor unions are a key lever for action on the pension sector, where they have a voice in the governance of the pension system. Their members are beneficiaries of these pension plans. And increasingly, we're finding that these unions are starting to speak out, not just on the climate-related investments and fossil fuel investments of the pension sector, but also other investments that might be not so good for human rights or for workers' rights or for a just transition or for Indigenous rights. So we're starting to see the unions whose members are part of these pension plans starting to get really vocal about what they're doing with their members' retirement savings.
Yeah, I guess I know this isn't really your field, but I'm curious, are there any other kind of investments that raise alarm bells for you in where these pension plans are putting their money?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give a few examples. More in my wheelhouse of climate and fossil fuels is the Coastal GasLink pipeline. I'm sure maybe you've heard of that. It's been in the news a lot in the last few years. But this is a fracked gas pipeline that they're building across BC that has not been given the consent of the Wet'suwet'en in North Central BC to cross their territory and build a fracked gas pipeline there. But this pipeline is actually partly owned by the Alberta Investment Management Corporation, which is the pension manager for Alberta's public sector workers. So here we have a direct example of a pension manager completely ignoring Indigenous rights in their construction and advancement of fossil fuel infrastructure that is completely inconsistent with the well-being and future retirement security of their own members. A little bit more outside the climate space, there is a big story in the media about a company called Thames Water, which is the privatized water utility in the UK that services about 15 million British citizens. This company is about 32% owned by OMERS, which is the pension fund for municipal employees in Ontario, and about 9% owned by the British Columbia Investment Management Corporation, which is the pension manager for public sector workers in BC. And it came out this week that this company was releasing raw untreated sewage into oceans and rivers in the UK, that they had the highest water leakage rates of any water utility in the country, and that it was so badly mismanaged that the UK government, which is a conservative government, was actually considering nationalizing it because of its underperformance and poor management. So that's a really good example of why I think public sector workers need to ask the question, why is my pension plan, why is my retirement savings partly dependent on the privatization of what should be a public utility, like a water utility in another country? And we're starting to see those questions all the time now. Another example for Ontario teachers is they bought a bunch of private hospitals in India earlier this year. So we've had teachers coming to us, you know, I'm a member of a public sector union. This is a public pension plan. Why is it buying private hospitals in another country? And that is what some of the revenue from going into my retirement savings is based on. And finally, in our work, we've really been looking at whether or not pensions have Indigenous rights policies. as in some cases, they're crown corporations, as these massive investors that are real influential in the physical economy, we think it's problematic that in this era of reconciliation, none of these pension plans have formal Indigenous rights policies to respect the United Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and advance reconciliation. We really need to see them do better, as they're parts of the financial and economic fabric of our country, and they can't be left behind in the era of reconciliation.
In a capitalist system, often to maximize profits, these companies will put profit over people, over human rights, over climate. So how do we, as we fight for, you know, better investments of these pensions plans, how do we balance the need for growth and the need for human rights and climate justice?
That's a really good question, and one that I'm sure nobody has cracked the nut on how to answer. But I do think it really goes to these pension managers needing to realize that our retirement security is based on a lot more than a simple financial return. We need affordable housing. We need good public services. We need an economy that's not marred by inequality. And we need, more than anything, a safe climate with healthy ecosystems to retire into. There's no quality of life in your retirement unless we have those things. And I think, considering the depth of the crises we're in, whether it's climate or inequality or the loss of public services, I think people are starting to realize that it will be impossible for these pension funds to deliver on their mandate to invest in our best long-term interests, and unless we have a safe climate future to retire into. There really is no retirement security without security on human rights, on climate, on public services, on a healthier, inclusive society. And I think we really need to get to the roots of the financial system and start looking at how to change that. That could look a lot more like the democratization of these pension plans, where the voices of members and stakeholders like unions have more of a say in how these funds are invested. I think that there needs to be more oversight from the government on how these pension plans are invested, not just in Canada, but all over the world. And in the climate sector, we're actually pushing for regulatory change now, legislative change, that would require these pension plans to have credible science-based climate plans. So just like Canada, as a member of the Paris Agreement, has to put forward a credible climate plan on how to get to zero emissions, we actually need to see the pension plans themselves coming up with these plans. And that's going to require regulation. We can't just count on voluntary measures from these financial institutions. We need to have government step in and ensure that our retirement savings are being managed in a way that is aligned with a healthy future for their own members.
Yeah, so it sounds like people power and really utilizing democracy is a big tool that we can use to make sure these pension plans, support workers' interests.
We really need to grow this movement and build our supporter base of members of these pension plans. We're a pretty small NGO, and we have worked really hard to build alliances with the public sector unions whose members are beneficiaries of these plans and who are often part of the governance structure of these plans. So we really would like to see unions speaking out more, not just on the climate issues with their pension plans, but also on those other issues we talked about, like human rights, like privatization, like public services, to make sure that their members are actually going to be able to retire into a future that allows them to have a good quality of life. And we can't do that without our public sector partners, who are our labor unions.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge on this issue today, Patrick. And I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you for joining us on Rabble Radio.
Yeah, thank you, Gabriella. Thanks for having me.
Patrick DeRoche, the senior manager for Shift, with Rabble labor reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga. Thanks so much for that, Patrick and Gabby. Switching gears now, here is Rabble editor Nick Seabrook to catch us up on the top news stories of the week in a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. In world news, Rabble national politics reporter Scott Martin explains how Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's recent announcement of increased military spending and stationing more soldiers in Latvia has more to do with public relations than any commitment to fight for democracy. Ahead of this week's NATO summit, Trudeau committed to spending $2.6 billion over the next 3 years to increase Canada's NATO presence in Latvia, raising the total number of Canadian soldiers there to 2,200. Earlier this year, the Trudeau government came under fire for failing to reach spending targets to support the NATO alliance. Ivan Kachanovsky, professor of political studies at the University of Ottawa, says that the ongoing war in Ukraine has been a useful tool for the Liberals to increase military spending in the name of defending democracy. In labor news, Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga reports how health coalitions, unions, and allies rallied for provinces to rein in healthcare privatization this week. Activists are now calling on provinces and territories to take accountability, specifically around unlawful extra billing. Extra billing is when patients are charged for medically necessary services that should be covered under provincial health plans. This type of upselling of patients is prohibited under the Canada Health Act. When provinces or territories are found not to comply with the rule against extra billing, an equivalent amount is withheld from the Canada Health Transfer. This year's Canada Health Act report showed that Newfoundland and Labrador, New Brunswick, Ontario, and BC all faced health transfer deductions for extra billing practices. Stephen Staples, National Director of Policy and Advocacy for the Health Coalition of Canada, said that the provinces have received a lot of federal funding this year for healthcare, and that his organization and their supporters do not want to see that public money wind up in private hands. And finally, national politics reporter Stephen Wenzel reports that a national ban on the testing of cosmetics on animals will come into effect by the end of the year. The ban was announced last month by Health Minister Jean-Yves Duclos in a press conference at the Lush Cosmetics factory in Toronto, where he noted the ban will not only support animal welfare, but will also further ensure health and safety are top priorities in the testing process. Through an amendment to the Food and Drugs Act, companies will no longer be able to test cosmetic products on animals. Businesses are also prohibited from selling cosmetics that relied on animal testing data to determine safety. As always, you can find the full version of these stories and much, much more on rabble.ca.
Rabble.ca shares news for the rest of us. We believe News for the Rest of Us is about creating a more informed and connected world. Help Rabble.ca make quality, progressive news and views accessible to all. Become a Rabble Rouser today and support us during our summer fundraiser with a one-time or monthly donation.
That's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Do you want to share Rabble Radio on your campus, college, or community radio station? It's easy. To find out more information on how your local radio station can become a host for Rabble Radio, please email us at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.